You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
This is the Armchair Cricket Podcast.
Hello all, welcome to another episode of Armchair Cricket Podcast, a podcast focusing on test cricket by armchair critics of the game. However, with the World Cup running all this time, we are more short format focused these days. To help me unpack the games from the 31st of October onwards, we have a well-liked guest, somebody who likes to be an enigma. Well, we'll ask him if he still wants to be that. Hello, Mog, welcome to the podcast.
Am I really here? I don't know, I'm being enigmatic.
All right. First of all, I see that you've taken up a slightly bigger role in the guerrillaverse, so to say, the words we invented or you invented. How does that feel to go to the, what's it called, the Box of Dreams?
The Box of Dreams, yeah. I'm mostly there for the cats. The load of kittens in there, so I spend most of my time looking at those.
Well, surprisingly gentle for a big man like you, but good. Good to hear. Nonetheless, so you've done some social media work, I think. You've also done some other things. So, plan to be there for the whole ride, whether Australia go the whole way or not?
I'll be more than happy if Australia don't go the whole way. I've probably got a couple more stints left in me by the end of it all, I think.
Perfect.
It's quite fun.
Indeed. We had in the previous episode spoken up to the game on 31st, so we will start there. We are starting with the World Cup, of course, and there are some other small news that we can cover towards the end, but let's start with the Pakistan-Bangladesh game. It was going to be a critical one if you are a Pakistan fan, because Pakistan had lost a couple of games back-to-back, and they were coming into this one. Their bowlers were discovering their mojo, and Bangladesh, the right sort of opposition to slay those demons and come back up.
Bangladesh haven't necessarily covered themselves in glory so far. So I think Pakistan might have been looking at that match as a nice way to tool up some opposition and get a bit of net run rate tacked on and get a win, obviously.
Absolutely. So they brought in Mohammad Wasim Jr. for this one. They let Shadab Khan sit on the bench. Usama Mir was included, although Usama Mir himself was not particularly successful. But the four fast bowlers sort of, you know, worked out a few kinks, surely. Iftikhar Ahmed, also part-timer, he's now more or less tasked with opening the bowling. And he completed his full quota. That was nice to see. I'm a big fan of Iftikhar. Shahid Shah Afridi took a 3 for. Haris Rauf a 2 for. Mohammad Wasim Jr. in the squad took a 3 for as well. And then the chase was done without much fuss. Babar failed, but really not a lot to be said there. I mean, the two openers sort of came out, wrapped the game up perfectly. And then it was just a matter of getting the remaining runs.
Yeah, it took them 30-odd overs to do it, so it wasn't a huge total to chase.
Well, Bangladesh would be feeling a bit sorry that, you know, they really have not covered themselves in glory. And I've seen some memes on the internets where their current chairman of the board has always said, we've always targeted the next World Cup and so on.
Well, they probably should have made a better effort at targeting the current one. They might have had some better results.
Mm-hmm.
So I think they were sort of considered to maybe be a little bit of a rough chance of doing well, and it just sucked.
Mm. Well, their bowlers came a cropper, or was it the batsman, if you were to think about it? I mean, both were equally culpable, but...
Probably a combination of the two. They did make a huge number of runs, I think. Mamadoula made 50.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you probably blame the bowlers for that, the Pakistan game, because they took 2 or 3 wickets.
Indeed.
Didn't really put up that much resistance.
Well, I mean, I'm looking at where they can go from here, right? So Mahmudullah, Shakib and Mushfiq will go shortly. That time is very close. People like Tauhid Hriday, sort of disappointed. And, well, the bowlers, Shariful Islam, very much on and off. Taskeen Ahmed is growing, I think into his boots well. I think I have a lot of respect for this guy. He's had a couple of off days, but he'll need good support. Mustafizur Rahman, for all the experience he has, not a lot of impact. It'll all come back again on Shakib also with the ball. Mehdi Hasan Miraz really doing good. I thought he did well both with the bat and reasonably well with the ball. Going forward, but Shanto, Litton Das, where do Bangladesh go?
Yeah, I think Das and Shanto are the two guys maybe to get the batting built around. Mm-hmm. Maybe Hasan Miraz is the nucleus of some decent bowling, I guess, in Taskeen Ahmed.
Yeah.
I guess I don't know a great deal about the players below this sort of squad level, so I'm not sure who's barking for attention, trying to get some more international duties.
Nah, that's a good point. And, well, they also will need a very good keeper, I'm sure. Because if Mustafizur goes, if Litton Das is one of your main batters, you don't want to also give him the gloves, at least in the longer format. That's quite something.
Yeah, and he may well end up being captain after Shakib goes as well. So captain, keeper, and your key batsman might be a little too much.
Right. Yeah, something for Bangladesh to introspect on. And, they have very passionate fans, so they have something to play for yet. There's still a couple of games left for them. And if you were to think of, what could they achieve in the remaining games, Mog, what would you think would be their target?
Oh, they could keep England on the bottom of the table. That'd be pretty handy.
Sri Lanka, Australia?
They could. I don't think they might be able to beat Sri Lanka. They've been a bit wobbly. Mm. I think Australia has decided that they're actually going to show up and play properly, so it might be a little bit too much.
Exactly. That's their last game. No, I dare say if they can't pick themselves up, deliver some good performances, it'll be all the way down. Yeah, but let's see if they're able to pick up that and go forward.
Oh, they might be able to end up in eighth and qualify for that mysterious Champions Trophy.
He's been talking for a while already, Shakib. 2 to 3 press conferences, he's been mentioning that. So can they do it is the question. Well, let's see if they can sort of, it's about proving something to yourself at the end of the day. They're almost in that part of the world. Now, the next game is South Africa, New Zealand. Two arch rivals, always some banter here. New Zealand were sort of flagging. They needed a good performance. And, they ran into a white-hot South Africa, whom they put into bat first. Thoughts on that?
That may be one of the greatest choices possible that anyone's ever made in cricket. South Africa, who's really good at belting vast amounts of runs, will they bat first? Let's put them in and let them do that. So, Latham dropped the World Cup with his toss there.
I mean,
that was a bad choice.
Absolutely.
Very bad choice.
Look, this is the South African team that's, struggled to chase twice. Once they've lost, once they've barely won. Would you not want to at least make them sweat a little? I mean, you have a batting order which is very strong, and it's been firing. You have a Rachin Ravindra who's probably the find of the World Cup if you're New Zealand, and definitely one-on-one for the fans for the next decade or so, if you can keep going. Right? So you have...
Certainly the most handsome.
Also the most handsome. Yes, this helps. Conway sort of flagged a little. Will Young is not able to convert. Daryl Mitchell, there or thereabouts. It's okay. Latham himself, Glenn Phillips, not a problem. But 357 or 358 was a bridge too far against Jansen, Kutse, Maharaj, Rabada, Lungi, Engidi.
Yeah, I think Will Young is obviously just sort of a desperate bit of tape until Kane Williamson's able to get him there properly. He's not really done a lot. I guess, all in all, I think it really just got down to the fact that they made the wrong choice at the toss. If they batted first, it could have been them putting up 300, 350.
Exactly.
I guess, hard to say. In hindsight, it's an easy thing to do that. But they might well have also been out for 180-odd. But this year would be walking into a trap, so to speak.
Look, Rabada was coming back. He had a point to prove. And Kutse has made himself almost undroppable with that attitude, with the older ball. And Marco Jansen, he took the new ball. And he showed he's quite a revelation. He sort of, between him and Kutse, mainly Jansen to start off with the new ball, because he took Conway and Ravindra out. And at 56 for 3, when Will Young was dismissed, you knew probably New Zealand will struggle to even make 300. Well, they didn't go halfway there. I mean, 167 with Keshav Maharaj doing a wonderful job cleaning up the tail, right? So a lot of things working suddenly again for South Africa. We'll see that going into the coming days as well, that, well, they sort of now are rolling along in quite the juggernaut fashion. And now, well, today is the game. We'll probably discuss it towards the end where India take on South Africa. We'll preview that if possible. So quite the team. Do you think this South African team has now the momentum and the guts, the steel to come to the finals maybe and look at the trophy day in the face?
If they don't have to chase. I think quite probably yes. I still don't think they'll win it, but I think they will definitely be in the final. They'll get through whoever out of Australia, New Zealand, Pakistan, Afghanistan, whoever manages to qualify for the semis.
Mm.
I think they've pretty much got into their measures quite happily.
Fair enough.
And because the Netherlands won't be making it to the semis, then they've got no real bogeyman coming at them.
Well, I think there's still a mathematical chance, isn't it, that Netherlands could make it? Or am I wrong there?
Yeah, I don't think so.
No, they can't. They can't. Sorry.
I think I got two games left.
I still had some hope. They have a game against England even. So, you know. Okay.
Might win one more.
Yeah. So, from there, we go to truly juggernaut performance. India versus Sri Lanka. India needed this. They needed to bat first, make a 350 plus themselves. They did that.
That 357, that's what South Africa made in the previous game too, wasn't it?
Exactly.
Just making that up.
However, I must say, maybe India had the better of the conditions. That ground in Pune where South Africa made those runs, they had to do some hard yakka in the first 20 overs or so. This Wankhede is a big deal. It's a big ground in Indian history. But also, I think it's a far more easier scoring ground. And Shubman Gill and Kohli sort of set themselves up beautifully, and then both of them had 100 for the taking. But okay, let's leave the milestones on the side. But they did what was required. By the time Gill was out, 193 in the 30th over, you knew where India was going. But I thought they should have gotten close to 400 from there, because Iyer did all the heavy lifting. But Rahul, Suryakumar, and, well, in the end, Jadeja was all right. But Rahul and Suryakumar, maybe 20 runs more that they left.
Yeah, you'd probably expect Sky to get a few more, given the reputation that comes with him.
Right.
But well, it turned out that it was approximately 7 times more runs than they needed anyway. So,
well,
it doesn't matter.
What do you do when Siraj is out of form? You play him against Sri Lanka.
Well, he quite thankful that he had the chance, because they weren't putting up much resistance at all for the first 4 or 5 wickets. 5, 6, 7.
Right.
Where did someone make double figures? Angelo Matthews, I think, made 12 or 13 or something.
It was almost the Asia Cup final repeat. It's been mentioned before. But looks like, you know, he was the one bowler who was a little struggling for impact. He was bowling well, but people were taking runs of him. And then, well, he comes up against his favorite foes. And, well, between him and Bumrah, I mean, I was looking at the first over. It was quite something. First, and then I turned my eyes, and then I turned around. Karunaratne is gone. And then I turned around again, and then Kushal Mendes is gone, and then Vikrama is gone, Sadhira Samara Vikrama. I'm like, what's happening? And there was only Angelo Matthews, double digits in the top 8. And then, well, 9th and Jack, they swung a little. Pulled Sri Lanka out of embarrassment. But did they?
They got 5 more runs than they did in the last final they played against them. So it's a 10% improvement.
But, well, if you're Sri Lanka, a 10% improvement over a certain number would be taken if it was 280, but maybe not 50, right?
No, I don't think they should all hang their heads in shame. That was an embarrassing performance, and how dare they do that on the big stage against India. Someone needs to beat India, and it wasn't going to be that.
Okay, but looks like somebody in the board level has paid the price.
Hmm.
Right? So the secretary of SLC has hung up his boots or his pen or whatever you carry if you're a secretary, in shame on how Sri Lanka have batted or not in this World Cup. And was it a political decision? I'm told he was politely asked to not continue. I mean, apparently the minister addressed that somebody in the board will need to take some accounting for this.
someone needs to be the scapegoat.
Mohan De Silva has actually resigned from his board position, and he did that already yesterday. So this is Saturday, the 4th of November, that he's decided to hang his pen and whatever else.
Jumped before he was pushed, I suppose. Mm. Good sign.
Somehow, the people right at the top are still safe. They will not probably have to pay the price. The secretary has been sacrificed.
Oh, well, it's not their fault, surely.
No.
They're doing everything right. No. It's all the people below them that are incompetent.
No need to worry about morality and moral responsibility, all that, right?
It's the 21st century. We don't use that anymore.
Okay. So, but I'm really disappointed because I wanted Sri Lanka to perform well. It's also near home conditions for them. And given how many times they've toured India, it's home conditions, isn't it?
It's as near as I could get, probably, without actually being at home.
Mm.
They were another team, but a bit like Bangladesh, that I thought would have done somewhat better than they have, but not to be.
Right. So that was a bit of a debacle, but a couple more things India would have wanted to have fixed. That's been fixed. Form of one or two of those bowlers. Madhushankar, well, he got hit in his last couple of overs, quite a few runs, but he kept at it. Took a 5-4, only shining light. Jameera came back, took the new ball, not very effective. And, well, everybody else was targeted, which is to be expected. But also from a bowling attack perspective, what would Sri Lanka look to do in the coming two games? Would they look to fix anything?
I imagine that they'll probably just collapse in a bit of a heap and just carry on. I don't think they're not going to make any changes necessarily to try and tweak with things. I think they'll just accept it and just carry on.
Right.
I don't think there's going to be a lot of change. Angelo Matthews, given that he's 75 years old, they might rest him. Who knows? But not much point resting him with this. Two games left.
Well, Charit Asalanka, Sadhira Samarakrama, at least they were peaking earlier in the tournament. Now they've really tanked. They tried playing Dushan Hemanta in place of one of my favorite cricketers, but Dhananjaya De Silva, who's been completely also off color here. They have a tough job on their hands. It'll take quite some turning around, even for Chris Silverwood, who had inspired them to quite something, some achievement. They lost a captain, not the most effective player, but influential, I think, within the group. Yeah, it's a bit of a tough journey for them.
Which reminds me, though, Balalaga, what happened to him? I missed.
I think he got injured.
Did he get injured?
He got injured. In the earlier part of the, just before the tournament started, even potentially. So he never made it to the squad.
Okay.
The spunk he brings is probably something you'll need in the lower down the order. But as a bowler, he has still a little bit of a way to go. But you hope people like him, between Sadhira Samarakrama, Kusal Mendes, they're not bad. But you can't completely subside like this. If you made a 160, you could have at least, well, look at what happened in the previous game, right? New Zealand failed. It was a terrible, terrible loss. But they came to 160. Mm. You'll be trolled. You'll be panned for that. But really, 50? There's nothing to say at all. It's like, let it be. We have nothing to add.
They'll just wait for all the various injuries to sort themselves out. Just move on after that.
Yeah, it's a tough one. Okay, on to the next one, where Netherlands took on Afghanistan. I expected a lot from the Netherlands in this game because they also did the right thing, I think, for them. Yeah, though from Afghanistan perspective, that's pretty much what they would have wanted. That Netherlands won the toss, chose to bat first. But Netherlands will give themselves the best chance if they put some runs on the board, right? They've been not good at chasing, while Afghanistan are really good at chasing. So before the match, I remember tweeting out, pretty much it's decided Afghanistan will bat second in this game. And that's how it transpired. But little bit of contributions from the top order. Max O'Dowd and Akhman started well. Baresi was given the opening slot based on his previous performance. Vikramjit was rested. Well, he's very young. Probably some lessons he can learn. I was not very enthused when they left Vikram Singh out. But it's okay. He's a youngster. He can learn, I'm sure. The top order, for a change, at least made something. 92 for 2 is not bad. But then...
they could have done without the constant run-outs.
What was that? 4 run-outs in a row.
Four run-outs. And I think almost all of them were just incredibly daft.
What was happening?
Sort of run. Yeah, they maybe some of them were calling in Dutch and some of them were waiting for answers in English. I don't know.
Well, but, given that it was
weird.
Max O'Dowd, Ackerman, Engelbrecht and Edwards, I don't expect any calling in Dutch.
Well,
but you could be right. They could have learned a couple of bad habits.
I think Edwards got run out first ball, yes, which really did not help the cause at all.
That was the turning point in the game for me. Look, Engelbrecht looked calm, but he was there, right? And this is when Edward comes in. The stage was set. The team is three down. You're walking in, but there was some crunch to play with for a change. And if he had gotten a 30 or a 40, Bastelida again, a little bit of a disappointment. Van Beek, who's been consistently making some runs at the bottom of the order, had to eventually fail. And he did, unfortunately. So now, that meant, you know, Engelbrecht stood with the tail. He couldn't really get going. And he himself was out. And from that point on, I mean, in the last 12 overs or so, last 13 overs, Netherlands barely made 25 runs. That was also a little bit disappointing because Afghanistan really tightened the screws. Mohammad Nabi, Rashid Khan, and Noor Ahmed, right there, they were waiting for this. They completely tightened the screws. And Netherlands had nowhere to go. They could hardly eke 2 runs every over. It was terrible if you're looking on, and I had to, or I was. That was very disappointing because this is where Netherlands have always found some way to make some runs, taken it past 200, 210. Maybe they could have had some belief. What happened there?
It's easy to say they peaked earlier in the tournament, I guess, but yeah, I think the wheels came off with those runouts, and then they just didn't have enough of a platform for Van Beek and De Leider and such to try and build on.
Mm.
Or Vandenberger, he's allegedly supposed to be a dab hand with the bat. He didn't really
correct
do a lot.
I think he's no longer that much of a force with the bat, I must say. He may give you a flashy 22.
But yes. Yeah, well, even a flashy 22 isn't bad if he's coming in at 9.
Yes, yes.
10 where it was, okay.
He came at 9. Aryan Dutt can swing the bat a little bit, but they were completely held like spellbound, and this is mainly thanks to Afghanistan were right there. I mean, if anything, what do we make of Afghanistan's performances?
It's good to see Nabi get some wickets.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think, who was the first bowler? Fazal Haq wasn't treated with any respect at all by the top order, at least.
8 fours, I think, in his first spell. that was not what you would have wanted, no?
Was that his first and his only spell? He come back, did he?
Right.
But, I guess the mighty lineup of spinners got in there and did the job. Well, Mujeeb opened the bowling, I think. So.
Yeah. Well, is he a spinner? Well, you have to ask yourself a few times. But yes.
Ta-da.
Well, another template chase. Their openers couldn't get really going that much. And Netherlands must be credited with keeping them quiet. But by the 10th over at 55, even though Ibrahim Zadran was dismissed, they had done enough that it was not going to be, I don't know, 10 for 2 or 20 for 2. And then Rehmat Shah, Hashmatullah Shahidi take over, make serene half centuries and just get through. And they got through very, very well. I mean, in terms of time, 32nd over, they wrapped the game up, right? That means their net run rate, they helped as well, which is what they would have targeted, which is the whole point, I think. They did that. They are sixth on the table now, but we'll get to it because they're sixth because of how well Pakistan played in the next game. What happened there? So there were two games, but let's talk about the more impactful one, right? Pakistan-New Zealand. What more have New Zealand to do to win a game?
Imagine the excitement in the dressing room. You've made 400 in a 50-over match. You're feeling good. You're young. Handsome young stars made another 100.
Right, he opened
second on the runs tally for the tournament. Kane Williamson was back in the side. He made a quality score. Everything's just going wonderfully.
Yes, wonderful finishing.
Unfortunately, Fakhar Zaman came in and decided, no, that's not good enough. We're going to sort this shit out, and they did.
No, and Fakhar Zaman must be given a lot of credit because this is back to back, twice in a row. So I think sometimes you need to drop this guy every now and then, I think. And he comes back with that added determination. So, second time in a row with the bat, he made a huge difference. And what a difference it was. They never looked back, I think, after the third over or something. The way he attacked Trent Bolt, who usually is good at taking wickets right up top. Right? Saudi was okay. I mean, Saudi did what Saudi does. But Trent Bolt was a danger man. And he took to Trent Bolt. That's what I think was a real big difference there. Abdullah Shafiq failed, but then Babar Azam came in, but it was all a Fakhar Zaman show. striking at 155 against a very high quality attack, where sort of they went on the defensive very quickly. New Zealand, they had to. They brought in their spinners, Santner and Glenn Phillips, first, second change, because the fast bowlers were really, really leaking runs. And even by the 8th over, they had the bull by the horns, and then they were riding the bull by the 15th over, Pakistan.
I'm not sure that bowling lineup of New Zealand's was is quite as lauded. Saudi's come in for his first look at anything and just got absolutely mangled.
Right.
Phillips did okay for the first couple of overs, and then each subsequent over after that, he was going for more and more runs.
Correct.
Bolton, Santner, were probably the Southie and Santner rather. Bolt got taken to.
Yeah.
Just the one wicket doesn't help.
Indeed. They gave no openings, and thanks to Fakhar Zaman, 11 sixes and 8 fours. I mean, this is some consummate hitting. It is not a very small ground. Oh, it is a very small ground. My apologies. It was Bengaluru. What am I saying? It is a very small ground. But to take advantage of that and do so well and stand up when it matters. It's like when the game stopped for the first time, Pakistan were ahead. When the game stopped for the second and the decisive time, they were even more ahead. There was no let up.
Yeah. I guess they knew there was a chance of rain, so they acted accordingly, made some runs, got ahead of where they needed to be, and then that worked out for them.
Perfect.
And they're still 200 runs behind what they needed to get if it was a full match, but it doesn't really matter, does it?
I don't think the shortened format really mattered, or because they were up and above the net run rate. There was never any doubt. They were, when you're 20 runs above the Duckworth Lewis, you're doing that much better. I mean, you can always count on a collapse. It's Pakistan. But today was not going to be one of those days. That's the feeling I get.
Going to Pakistan. Although I think New Zealand's net run rate actually increased after that game. So
yeah, they did increase their net run rate because of how well they batted in their 50 overs. But
sure, that's a great comfort for them.
They're barely hanging on to the fourth spot because Pakistan is now right there beating down their necks. Afghanistan as well, same number of points. How do you see these three teams? I'm going to leave Sri Lanka out. So it's between New Zealand, Pakistan and Afghanistan for the fourth spot. How do you think it's going from here?
Yeah, I think New Zealand will probably do it.
They're in a slump, real slump.
But,
four losses in a row.
If they're serious about it, then they're a professional bunch of guys. They'll look at it and go, well, we need to fix this. Although I suppose the fact that they just made 400 and are still lost probably won't help the confidence much. If Cade Williamson doesn't dislocate an arm or have a piano drop on him, which seems to happen every second week, if he can stay in there and keep up the form he's going on, at least their batting's still going to be okay.
Right.
I can't imagine Bolt's going to have another game where he gets belted for whatever it was, 50 or 5 or 6 overs.
Hmm.
Although now I said that, maybe Pakistan's got the taste of it now. Maybe they'll get him.
Exactly. That's what I'm thinking, right? If you're not careful, you might feed the beast. Now the beast is waking up, the Pakistan team. And they are sort of now in the right place where their bowlers, they went for a lot of runs in this game, but they can put it behind them. They can just look one game back where they were all very effective, which we discussed. So you would then think, yeah, Pakistan is now sort of picking at the right time. New Zealand are sort of flagging.
Going in the direction.
If you remember our mutual friend Anindya, he predicted New Zealand will not make the Final Four.
They did play a lot of quote-unquote lesser teams early up, I guess, which might have flattered to deceive a little bit. But that game against Australia, if they'd gotten over the line with that one, maybe.
Well, just a quick break from the World Cup, because it's... The Super Over is in progress.
Have you got some breaking news?
The Nepal versus Oman game.
Yes, let's just look at that.
Lamit Chani took 3 wickets in the last over and held them down to 7 runs to actually take the game into Super Over. Nepal versus Oman, and Nepal batting first and now 7-4 loss and 2 balls. Now we'll need to come back to the World Cup, I suppose. So then the other game, your favourite game, the one where Australia played well.
Yeah, not Australia. They're the greatest. They're all very deserving and... Anyway, how about that batting performance from Ben Stokes yesterday?
Oh, yeah. He was okay. He took some time and eventually he had to come good. And that's when he got out.
Broken clock is right twice a day. He shouldn't be there in the first place, but...
I think they suckered him into thinking there was a gap there. The way he played the shot and then collapsed. I thought he was out-thought by Zampa, the greatest non-turning leg-break bowler in the history of the game.
That hurts when I hear people say that.
Why?
Yeah, I'm a hater. I just don't like him.
Come on. He made runs with the bat. Those were the runs that won the game for Australia. He took wickets with the ball. He took one outstanding catch. What more should he do to win your approval?
I don't think he can. It's too late. That bridge has been burned.
Okay. Is it his camaraderie with Stoinis? What's the root cause?
Oh, Stoinis. Don't get me started on Stoinis.
Go on.
I don't know. I just don't know. Some people just do it. It's one of those.
Well, I have another important question, though. Is it because Maxwell has a couple of screws loose in his head that he keeps doing these daft things? Or does it keep him there, that genius? He needs to maintain the genius, so he needs to get knocked on his head a couple of times a year? How does this work?
Actually, in the Box of Dreams yesterday, we were having a bit of a discussion about cricketers who are just flat out sort of insane. Mm. And he might be one of those guys that is just sort of on the far side of crazy, and you've sort of got to take the occasional falling off a golf cart and giving yourself a concussion with making 50 runs off 13 balls kind of thing.
Mm.
He's an idiot, clearly, but...
Hello, Balwan, come on.
Well, I don't have an issue with him, surprisingly, for an Australian. But, it's... they didn't need him, I don't think, for this game anyway.
Yeah. I was going to lead up to that. It would have been a good game to give him a break. I think he took a break. But before we go there, just quickly, do you think they may have been racing? And as a result, with the golfing carts, you know, men being men, boys being boys, racing with golfing carts, him hanging off of a golfing cart and falling off. Something like this could have happened, do you think?
Absolutely could have happened. First thing I thought of when I saw the news of it was that they'd had a day off. They'd been out on the beers all day, and he's doing some sort of idiot thing on the back of a golf cart and just fallen off because he couldn't properly hold on.
Mm.
It's quite possible that there were three carts, and they're all at the light at the starting line, and off they went, and he wasn't holding on properly and fell off.
Correct.
Any number of things. Said all sorts of fairly interesting rumors about what it was.
Uh-huh.
But I don't know exactly what it was. Some of which are probably a little bit slanderous and shouldn't be repeated.
Right.
It's no different to some of the other stupid things people do on golf courses.
Right. At least for now, he
did. English players, actually.
Yeah. At least for now, I think they got away without him. And Green came in, made some runs. Stoinis held up his end of the bargain, more or less. But then I think the real difference was those runs by your favorite cricketer, along with Cummins and Stark chipping in with a 10 each. Don't you think so?
Yeah. I think he only made 30-odd at fairly quick time. So England might have been able to chase down 260.
Mm.
Maybe. So take out Zampa. Yeah. It certainly didn't hurt, I suppose. It put that sort of icing on the cake at the end.
I see.
And the way England's going, that they wouldn't have struggled.
I see. So
regardless, I think.
No, but at 286 in Ahmedabad, it's sort of chaseable. This is a high scoring ground. Right? This is a marquee contest. England-Australia is always a marquee contest. And this was potentially the time where we thought England will do something. They did well to keep Australia under 300 when, you know, if you look at the 23rd over onwards, they started striking. So until then, Australia built a solid platform with Smith and Labuschagne, and then Smith was dismissed, and then Inglis was taken cheaply. And then they kept striking, ensuring Australia never built a platform. They were really doing good. They would be a little disappointed after the 44th over, when they sort of took the pedal with their foot off the pedal. But then still 286 is chaseable. But then what's wrong with the top order? What's wrong with Johnny Bairstow and Joe Root?
I guess they would have been happy that they bowled Australia out. But Root and Bairstow, I have a suspicion he's not long for the team if he keeps that kind of antic up.
Right.
Joe Root... I think maybe he's having one of his troughs.
Mm.
It's a sort of a thing where a whole bunch of players in that team are at low ebbs of form at all at the same time.
Mm.
And then you have Stokes, who's possibly just being held together with bits of tape.
Yes. Yes.
He probably shouldn't have played at all because, you know, fitness. Give Brooks a game. At least give them some hope for the future. Livingston's possibly just no good. Moeen Allen's, at least he did all right at the bat. And Chris Wokes would have been their best player of the day, I think.
Right.
Basically, he took a few wickets, took a few runs off the Australians. So if Stokes can't bowl, then he's your next best option as your powerful all-rounder. Because Livingston's going to do.
Right. So in this case, Livingston, I thought, was unlucky also. Come on, that was a wonderful catch. I mean, you thought in 8 times, 9 times out of 10, that's going to the boundary. He was unlucky.
Catches win matches.
Yeah, of course. And Abbott was brought in and placed at the right place, right? And then Wokes.
He was on the ground because Labuschagne had a dodgy finger. Was that so? Why was on the ground?
I don't know, really. Was that the case? Okay, maybe.
Stoinis did have to go off at some point because he hit his hand. It's something other. But yeah, I don't remember exactly what stage of the match that was in.
Right. From that point on, you can see Moeen Ali tried his bit. Chris Wokes, David Willey, Adil Rashid. These three can't be faulted much. Chris Wokes even hit a six, and he was surprised, I think, he hit a six himself. But Willey and Rashid, they've been there or thereabouts. They've always tried to do what is required of them. But then it was way too late. There was no way England were going to win this, even though they had some balls left. But it was mostly the balls that were soaked up between Malan, Stokes. I think Stokes was the real culprit there. I mean, he needed to go after having soaked up so many balls. In a chase of 286 near 6 runs and over, you can't be 71 and then get out. Strike rate of 71, right? You need to then make it close to 100 before you go.
I think that given the nature of the Ben Stokes experience, that people just focus on the fact he hit some sixes. He made a 50. Oh, it's wonderful. Although Wokes and Willie and Rashid, it's not their job to make runs. It should be the guys up above that are taking care of that. So
correct. Then we cannot... We cannot leave out the stellar bowling performance from your favorite bowler. I mean, 21? 21 over a 10-over spell? Really?
Three for 21? Yes. Yeah. He's the leading wicket taker in the tournament now as well, which frankly baffles me. I just don't know how that happened.
Well, think about it. The way he's built it back from where he started, how the tournament started for him. 19 wickets so far.
Which isn't a bad effort.
No.
And
fantastic.
I will grudgingly acknowledge that he's taken some wickets and good for him.
Yeah, absolutely. Right? And you would think he has a chance to make it a 25-26 wicket tournament, given that he...
Australia's going to play in the semi-final at the very least, so that's, what, 3 more games he has?
Uh-huh.
2 wickets per game. 25.
So, yeah. And then I think he'll play against Afghanistan. The form he's in, Afghanistan, you wouldn't want to take lightly. Right? So, Bangladesh, he may be rested. You're right. Semi-final, he will play. But then, I heard a bit of confidence there that Australia will play in the final. Or did I mistake that?
Oh, well, they'll certainly play in the semi. If they have to play India or South Africa in that semi-final, I can't see them getting through it.
There you go.
I haven't really checked the permutations, but they could probably beat Pakistan or New Zealand, but I don't think they're going to beat the other two.
Well, it's about today's game, isn't it? So we should get to today's game, which is India-South Africa. So it's all about that. So these are the table toppers. India are unbeaten, 7 games. South Africa only 1 loss. So if South Africa can beat India, they'll get that edge on India, they can become the number one team. Because look, you don't want to be the number two team here. Because with number one team, there's a chance, the most expected, the most mouth-watering chance, India can play Pakistan in a semi-final of a World Cup again. Right? And we all know what happened the last time India played Pakistan in the semi-final of a World Cup, 2011. Right? So that's what you want if you're an India fan. So you don't want to lose.
Not so much if you're a Pakistan fan.
And some reviews, Saeed Ajmal, if you ask him and so on. Right? If you go back now, so to where these two teams are going to play each other, the toss has already happened. Well, the game has already begun, Mark, but let's just give the toss news out.
No spoilers.
India have opted to bat, and they're 45 for no loss. in 4 overs. Pretty decent start, you think?
Given South Africa's fairly decent bowling lineup and South Africa's propensity not to be a good chasing team, that looks like a handy toss to have won. Because clearly I'll be backing for South Africa in that one, but India maybe needs to just drop a game before the finals to maintain a bit of humility and
why
keep them grounded.
Well, Australia did, you know. You know what Australia did? They won 2 tournaments without dropping a game. Why do you need humility?
Yeah, that was disgusting. Come on. Because just look at the size of their heads. My God, their egos are out of control.
Well, they were already out of control if, you know, Ponting and McGrath, what do you expect? And Vaughan and so on. But come on. At least this Indian team, they're doing it at home. They've put up a perfectly balanced, air quotes, World Cup for themselves. And, well, all of the things are going according to plan and they need to finish it off, right? You can't now slip up.
It'd be a fairly impressive if they can go through the whole thing undefeated. I guess that's
right.
That's something hanging out on.
Pretty much. So that's what they'll be targeting. And they'll want to make 300 plus, maybe even 400 plus, if they can go that far, but it's way too early to say that. But it's going to be a cracker jack, whichever way this match goes. So India started well. They won the toss. They're batting first. They've started aggressively. So that's going to be interesting. Well, the Oman versus Nepal game has ended, the super over. And well, Nepal have been crushed in the super over.
Drum roll, please. God. That's disappointing. Slightly disappointing.
Mm-hmm. Well, Oman have been the form team. At least in this tournament, they've done really well. And at least they would be really disappointed they couldn't clinch that last ball when they needed 2 runs to win. The game got tied. That must have been quite a thriller. I'm going to try to see some highlights if I can. But the same two batsmen came out. At least Naseem Khushi had a different idea. He hit a mere 3 sixes in the super over.
Only 3. Wow.
Well, I remember, I think once in a super over in an IPL game, I think Yusuf Pathan had hit 3 sixes. So, it's possible, right? And then Nepal hit out. They hit the last 2 balls for 4s, but it was way too many runs required. And they won. They lost by 11 runs in the super over. And well done to Oman. And more importantly, well done to both Oman and Nepal, first of all, for qualifying for the World Cup. Next year, T20 World Cup. And then Oman on winning the qualifier.
Yes, indeed. That means they've gone through undefeated, I believe.
There you go.
So then they can follow up their otherwise strong form against some big grown-up teams next year.
Exactly.
Hopefully.
Well done to Oman, who've been really good throughout the tournament. They're playing in more or less alien conditions. They're playing in very high grounds in Nepal in terms of altitude, but they've adapted very well. And, their bowlers come to the roost when it was required. Well, in the final, it was not as much of a good job with the bowling because Powdal and Gulshan Jatt took them to the task. And you think batting first, making 184 at home, you'd be the favourites in a T20. But they never stopped believing, as per that journey song or whatever. And they kept... sorry. Couldn't help but drop that. So, and then, you know, they showed a lot of pluck in the end. Mohammad Nadeem hung in there and made a very, very vital 24 of just 9 balls.
24 of 9, yeah.
That's what really tied the game for them. And that's really well done. And they deserve to take the tournament home. They never stop believing. Sorry. And they're now deservedly the champions. So well done to Oman. And we look forward to having both them and Nepal in the World Cup next year.
Yes, indeed. It's good to see from teams from the more quote-unquote far-flung outposts of cricket actually getting to appear on the stage.
Absolutely.
20 teams next year, so much, much more opportunity for all these people that are toiling away underneath the glamorous lights of India and England and South Africa.
Mm. Well, another news, Sikandar Raza has been appointed the Zimbabwe T20A captain. The Test and the ODI captaincy will remain with Craig Irwin, but this is a good timely appointment, do you think, heading into the qualifiers?
I would think so. His form's been pretty good. So hopefully the little bit of extra responsibility will help him carry that on and help guide them into the qualifiers with Namibia. But
no, I mean,
I wouldn't be upset if Uganda got it.
You hope so. Well, Zimbabwe and Namibia also played a 5-match T20 series, very closely contested one, which Zimbabwe lost by playing badly in the last game, 3-2. But, well, at least it's a good move. As long as he's also on board, he wants it, because he's also their most important player when it comes to T20s. So I don't know if it'll really pressurize them.
Yeah, I'm not really sure if there's any politics going on in the background, but he would seem sort of the obvious choice for...
Okay.
Hopefully it's not something that's going to weigh on him. But it is, like you said, it's something that he actually has pursued and wants to do and is keen for and isn't finding it a sort of an added burden that he doesn't really need.
Exactly, exactly. All right, but you are also a fan of the associate cricket world. Do you have anything interesting to discuss?
I have a bit.
Maybe the Asian qualifier, maybe something else?
Well, the Asian qualifier was interesting in that all but one of the eight teams actually managed to win a match. Singapore didn't manage to win and trouble to score as such, but lesser fancy countries like Bahrain, happily, they end up second in their group behind the UAE.
Right.
The UAE have sort of come back a little bit from where they were, but didn't quite make it this time, unfortunately, which Oman has kind of replaced them, I guess, as the Arabian superstars.
Nice to see, isn't it?
Is that a thing?
Yeah, it is, I'm sure. There's a horse by that name out there. But yes.
And Kuwait as well also played in the qualifier, so good to see Arabian teams getting a bit of a boost without Saudi Arabia just buying
Wait
stuff.
For it. Saudi Arabia doesn't buy teams until they're successful. Wait.
Yeah, well, give them a few years. Maybe if Oman does well next year, suddenly it'll be the House of Saud presents the Oman cricket
maybe,
team.
Maybe, maybe. All right.
Not sure they'll
I mean, if you are thinking country-wise, that's a very intricate arrangement you'll have to come up with, but I'm sure they can manage this.
Not the same as a franchise.
So, do you expect Saudi Arabia to start their own cricket league shortly sometime, Mog? Or is that still a bit far away, like how they did with golf?
Might be a little bit far away, but if they look around the world and see that there's a bunch of leagues that make money and do a bit of sports washing, then I'm pretty sure they'd be keen to try it. And if they can throw around some dollars, they could certainly be able to attract some names of the sort of your standard franchise travellers.
Uh-huh.
Maybe Chris Gayle will come out of retirement.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They'll buy him a couple of new Ryan-studded stripper poles or something.
Well, whatever he wants. I'm sure he's a bit too heavy for those, but you know what I mean.
Oh, I don't think he's on.
I see. I see. All right. Interesting. Those were all the news we really wanted to discuss for this episode's for this episode. But nonetheless, thank you very much, Mark, for taking the time out and making it on the podcast. I know you're a very busy man, what with your commitments with Guerrilla Cricket and so on.
Yeah, well, no, let's not overstate those, but always glad to be here.
Well, always glad to have you and your interesting view on how the world of cricket should be. Thank you very much. Would you like to give a shout out to our listeners where they could potentially reach out to you?
If you want to send me a tweet, it's MOG7734, I think. otherwise, you can hear my slightly annoying voice on Guerrilla Cricket and White Line Wireless, at least for the rest of the World Cup. And if you just want to listen to the excitement of the jingles that I do for them, there's plenty of highlights packages and such that they're doing daily. There's whole games in their archives. So
perfect.
Enjoy the pain. Go listen to some of those.
Indeed. Won't you want to give out a shout out about your amazing band as well?
Well, yes, my amazing band, Disinterested Handjob, just recently released a CD, the title of which I probably shouldn't mention on here due to there being three of the most offensive words in the human languages on there.
All four letters.
But, right? If you go to Disinterested Handjob, at .bandcamp.com, you'll find all of those fun things, including stuff that will hurt your ears and hurt your eyes.
Wow. Something to look forward to. That's a hardcore death metal fan. Mark.
Yes. Well, even more hardcore than that.
Well, let me actually put it to you. I've been wanting to ask you, is there something called filth metal? I think you should start this genre.
Not as such, but that's just something that could apply to certain things. So yeah,
fair enough.
I'll start tagging things for that and see if it takes off.
I think that's perfect. All right. We thank all our listeners for the patience, and we hope to have you again with us in the coming episodes. Have a nice day wherever you are. Bye-bye.
Bye.
This is the Armchair Cricket Podcast.
Podcast Network.